today is found in the book of Nehemiah. We left off speaking to you last week when Nehemiah heard how that the condition of Jerusalem was from certain men that came from there. This touched him very much. It made him sit down and weep and mourn certain days, and he fasted because the people from whom he had originated were in such distress, and they were being made a scorn of and mocked with. And I spoke to you how that this typifies the Church of Christ, and how that when the Church of Christ, like in our times, also is in such a low state, and also many times is despised and mocked and scorned at, that very few of us are touched as Nehemiah was. He was touched. And what a blessing when God touches our heart and when he lays it upon our heart and gives us to do as Nehemiah did. For he mourned and he wept and he fasted and he prayed unto God. And we find that he addresses God. I beseech thee, O Lord, the great and terrible God, who keepest covenant with those that obey thy commandments and have mercy upon them. How wonderful this man addresses God, the great and terrible God. Oh, he is much greater and much higher than any one of us. How, when we also come unto him, that we likewise should be filled with reverence and awe when we address this divine and glorious being in heaven above. And Nehemiah, he continues to pray unto God, confessing the sins of the Israelites and the sins of his own house and of his father's house. And he beseeches God that his ear would be attentive and that his eye would look down upon the prayer that thy servant offereth up unto thee at this time. How he was desirous that God would open his ear and listen to his prayer, and that his eye would be upon him, for he had faith in exercise. He believed that he was a servant of God, and that he was praying to him and desired that he would listen to his prayer. What a mercy when we come to God and may pray to him and may believe that we are one of his servants, one of his children, and that his ear is attentive unto us and that his eye is upon us. And whenever we have faith in exercise, then we are given to believe that he likewise is very near unto us. This Nehemiah experienced in this prayer that he sent up to God. And he desired that God would likewise remember him and remember those other servants who likewise were praying with him, who feared him, and who loved his name. And he likewise desires that God would give unto him mercy in the sight of the king before whom he was the cupbearer. And Nehemiah then had something laid with weight upon his soul, upon his heart. He had a desire given unto him by God that he would go back to the city of Jerusalem and build this city, which lay in ruins, the walls being down and the gates burned with fire. And now he knew that if he had permission of this king before whom he was the cupbearer, then the king likely would offer him help and assistance to go and build this city. This was what he was burdened with. And therefore, we find him praying to God in this way, that God would favor him and give him mercy in the sight of this king. He was then the king's cupbearer. He gave wine unto the king, as I said last week, and these men that were cupbearers had an important position. And they never could give the king wine until they drank some of it themselves, because the kings were subject to being poisoned by their enemies. And therefore, it happened many times that kings had enemies right in their own palace, right amongst their own men. And therefore, it was a custom that the cupbearer would drink of the wine first before he passed it on to the king. And now we find him in the second chapter being before the king and giving wine unto him. And now this burden was on his heart. And he had never been sad before the king before. He always had a joyful face and a smile. And the kings of the Medes and the Persians didn't want anybody to be before them with a mournful face. And they always had to have a smile, and they had to be very jolly. And this Nehemiah had always been before. And the king loved this man, Nehemiah. He had a great favor to him. But now this day, he noticed that he was very sad. He didn't smile. He didn't do like he had done before. And when the king noticed this, he said unto him, "Why is thy countenance sad? You are not sick. This is nothing else but a sadness of heart." Now Nehemiah, when this king spake to him in this way, he began to speak unto the king and said, "Why should not my countenance be sad, when the city of my father's sepulchres lies in ruin?" This then was the burden that he had on his heart and on his mind, and this was why he was so sad. And when the king heard this, he said unto him, "For what dost thou make thy request?" It seemed that the king was already willing to help him in whatever the burden was and whatever he desired to do. But now we find that before he began to make his request, he prayed unto God. He did not have time to go into his inner chamber. He didn't have time to bend his knees or to fold his hands or to close his eyes and to be in a reverent posture when he offered up this prayer. He was standing before the king, and it was a short and a very comprehensive prayer. It came from his heart. He prayed unto the God of heaven, it says. Now, I have been speaking to you about Nehemiah having a burden on his heart and looking very sad. Have you ever had a burden on your heart? Have you ever looked very sad? There are many things in our natural life that causes us many times to walk around with a sad face. It may be that we feel not well. It may be that we have someone in our family that is afflicted, and it's laying upon our heart and upon our mind that one that we love, one of our children, our partner in life, is afflicted by the hand of God. And when this takes place in our family life, we may notice it on each other. We bear each other's burdens. Sometimes it pleases God to remove the one out of the family, sometimes a partner in life. A bereavement takes place. This has taken place with many of those that are listening to me, and they have had a sad countenance. Sorrow was evident upon their faces because they suffered such a severe loss. And many times in this life, things go against us providentially. Sometimes we are in a good employment, We are making progress in this world, but something takes place and that we lose our employment. We have to take an inferior position, and we lose much of the wages that we had before, and this affects us. This is a blow to us. It makes us sad. Now, there are many other things that I could bring forward which people walking on this earth look sad about. But let me question you, if you ever have had a burden of sin upon your soul, if ever God has convicted you of your sins, then you likewise have had a countenance that was sad. When this takes place, a person feels that he has sinned against a good, a kind, a gracious, and a merciful God. When he feels it, not just when he has it in his mind, but when he has it in his heart, all the sorrow or the repentance that such a person has cannot be described in words. If ever you have had it, you will say with me, I thought I never would smile again. I thought I never would laugh anymore. I know that's the way it went with my own person. People said to me, what's the matter with you, John? You used to be the life and the joy of our company. But I sat with a sad face, a solemn face. I was a sinner in the sight of God. Have you ever been there? Have you ever been brought into your inner chamber with weeping and supplications because you have sinned against this God? It's a mercy, my hearers, if God has given you this in this life. If you never experienced this, my hearers, I feel sorry for you. That's the way God begins with a sinner's soul. He has true sorrow for sin, and this sorrow is reflected upon his face. And there are many other times in a Christian's life that he has a sad face. Sometimes his face is radiant with joy, not the joy of this world, but his face is lit up. Tears run down his cheeks because that God is favoring him with his smiles, with his communion, with his fellowship, with his dearness, with his presence, with his love. Have you ever had something like that? That's an altogether different joy of this world, my hearers. All to be lifted up above the confines of this world and to be placed as Paul was. He didn't know whether it was in the body or out of the body, but he was taken up into the paradise above. And there he had seen great and unspeakable things which it was not sufficient for a man to speak about. So in the spirit sometimes, God's dear children are lifted up above everything here below. And if they had wings, they would fly away and be at rest. And how many times in the Christian's life he is sad concerning that this, what I am speaking about, happens so seldom to him. There have been times when they have enjoyed the presence of God in their inner chamber and reading the precious Bible, coming to his house. They have experienced his nearness, his love, his mercy, his favor towards them. And my hearers, this is worth more than all the gold and silver in this world. And there comes a time when they must miss this. When they come to the house of God, they have nothing of that anymore. No ear to hear it, no heart to receive it. They're wondering what's going on within them. Sin seems to get the upper hand, and they seem to give way so to it that they fear all what they have had before is wrong. It never was of God. And when a person is walking with that, he has a sad face. He has a solemn face. He misses the presence of his best friend. I don't know if any of you have had that in this life. We have here an example of Nehemiah. He was burdened with the church. He was burdened with the condition of his people back in Jerusalem. And now when this takes place, as it did in Jerusalem, and it takes place in our individual life, if we are far from God, we haven't had anything from God in a long time, and we speak to others and we meet them, they're in the same condition we are in, and then we should be touched, we should be affected with our case. It should bring us upon our knees. It should bring us as it did Nehemiah. He wept and he mourned and he fasted and he prayed to God. And this is the sad state, my hearers, in which we are living in, that we are not affected with each other's cases, that there is such an indifference, that there is so little love and so little affection towards each other, and that we can leave each other in their own cases. We just live for ourselves as individuals. Nehemiah didn't do that. He was burdened with this. He couldn't leave God alone because of it. He cried to God, and he begged God that God would open the way whereby he could be of service to the church, to his people. And he knew if he got permission of this king, then he could do wonders. And therefore, we find him standing before the king, and he sends up a prayer. And I prayed unto the God of heaven. Don't say what he prayed. You don't read a word. It just says, and I prayed unto the God of heaven. Probably he said, oh God, give me to find mercy in his sight. Give me a mouth to speak unto this king. That's about all he could say. This teaches us, my hearers, that the throne of grace is always open. It don't make where you may be, what trouble you may be in, who may be before you. There's always a way open to heaven. And this teaches us likewise that we should be always in a praying attitude. No matter what circumstances we may meet in this life, what the case may be, how we are placed sometimes in positions that we don't know what to do, look up. Ask that God to help you, to pray to him when you are in true need. I would say, my hearers, these times that we offer up these prayers are true prayers. Oh, many a true prayer goes up unto God with the hat on the head, as we say sometimes. We don't have any time to show reverence or anything to God, but it comes right from the heart to God. Have you ever prayed that way? Nehemiah prayed that way, my hearers. And did God hear him? Did God answer his prayer? May I ask you, have you ever had an answer to prayer? Have you ever sent up such a short prayer when you was in need, when you was in trouble, when you knew no way out, and God heard you? He delivered you. He came to your rescue. What a mercy, my hearers, if you have something like that in this life. And now this man, Nehemiah, when he prayed in this way, then he began to speak. And he asked the king if he would have permission to go back to the city of his father's sepulchers and rebuild it. And the king, with the queen sitting alongside of him, he granted him permission and granted him his request. He had said unto him, what dost thou make your request for? And my hearers, if you are like Nehemiah, and if you are a praying sinner, as the king said to Nehemiah, so this great king in heaven above, he says, what maketh you your request for? Have you any request to make to this king in heaven above? Was this earthly king ready to answer this man and give him his request. Oh, more so in heaven above we have a king that is so willing to hear and so gracious to answer. Why, he invites you to come to him. He says, open your mouth wide and I will fill it. Or he says in the Song of Solomon, let me hear thy voice, show me thy countenance, for thy voice is sweet and thy countenance is comely. How inviting is this Jesus at the right hand of the Father to sinners. And oh, when we may send up prayers like Nehemiah, we verily will be answered. He received an answer. He was permitted by this king to go back to the city of his fathers. He requested likewise that the king would give him letters so that he could be conveyed across the river Euphrates, and that the governors on the other side of the river would receive him. He requested also that he would be permitted to take beams, wood, out of the forest of the king to build again the gates and the walls of the city of Jerusalem. And God in heaven above, he who has the heart of kings in his hand, inclined this king to favor Nehemiah so that Nehemiah could go back to the city of Jerusalem. Now Nehemiah requested that he likewise would have a guard to accompany him. I said to you when we were speaking about Ezra, he didn't want a guard to go along with him. He had said unto the king that God who he worshipped would take care of him. But Ezra was a scribe. Ezra went up to teach the people. And Ezra had faith to believe that God would guide him in safety to Jerusalem. But Nehemiah, he went up to build the city of Jerusalem. He went up to defend this city against its enemies, which were prevailing over it when he received the messages from these men that came to the city. And the king granted him likewise a guard that accompanied him, and soldiers and horses, and he went up to the city of Jerusalem. Now when he came to the city of Jerusalem, he did not make known to anyone in the city what he had come for. He didn't go to the ruler of the city as a stranger. And when he came there, we find that he went out at night. He took his donkey and he rode through the city to see if the desolations were as bad as what he had heard of. And they were much worse, because many times he couldn't even go with his horse. He had to turn back. There was so much ruins and so much heap of rubbish that he couldn't get over it. And so when he came back after he had visited the gates and the walls during the night, the next day he went to the rulers and to the leaders and the scribes and told them what God had put into his heart, and how that he had been before the king and got permission so that they could go ahead and build this city again. And all these people, they were so glad. They believed what Nehemiah told them. They believed that God was with this man and that God had favored him in the sight of this king. And we find that Nehemiah, he prevailed upon the people to begin to build the walls of the city of Jerusalem. And now when the enemies heard that there came a man who favored the Jewish people and who was ready to build these walls again, these enemies, they laughed him to scorn. Why, they said, do you rebel against the king? And one of the other ones says, why, after they get the walls built, if a fox runs on the top of them, the walls will collapse. That's how weak they'll be. And they made fun of these Jewish people because they were going to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. And these enemies, And they made a mockery of them. But we find that Nehemiah, he spake unto these enemies, Sambalat and Tobiah, and said, "We, the servants of the God of heaven, will build, and he shall prosper us. But ye have no right, no memorial, no portion in Jerusalem." These enemies that opposed the building of this city, they were heathens. They had been placed in these parts round about Jerusalem by a king by the name of Shalmaneser, an Assyrian king. And these people, they were mixtures. They were Ammonites, they were Arabians, they were Cuthians, and they knew nothing about the God of heaven. They did not worship him. And this man, Nehemiah, he said, they had no portion, they had no life, they had no memorial in Jerusalem. All my hearers, if this be our state, if this be our condition, how sad it is. But these Israelites, they were God's covenant people. God had taken them out of the land of Egypt and led them dry-shod through this great sea. He had chosen them as his peculiar people. He had given unto them his laws, given unto them his oracles, his testimony. He had dwelt amongst them. He was with them all through their journeys. He never left them, never forsook them. No matter how they acted and how rebellious they were, they were still his people because he was the covenant God and he kept his covenant. And now he again was visiting these people. Again he was helping these people. They were the people who God favored. But these heathen people, they had no portion. They had no right. They had no memorial in Jerusalem. They were not of the Israelitish nation, and they likewise had no right to come into the temple. They had no right to worship there. The Samaritans even, they weren't even permitted to come there. And they had likewise no part of all of the promises and all the benefits of the covenant that God had given unto Israel. Now here we have two seeds, my hearers, the seed of the devil and the seed of Christ, explained in the seed of Israel and the seed of these enemies that came up against Jerusalem. How awful if we are still of the seed of the devil. And then we likewise are enemies of God and of his church and of his people. And we reveal that again and again in our lives. And we then have no portion, we have no right, and we have no memorial in Jerusalem. There may be some soul that says, "I think that's my condition. I think that's me. I don't have any portion. I don't have any right. I don't have any memorial in Jerusalem." Oh, have you never had it? That you had to believe when you were under the truth one time that you were one of his children? And this man, Nehemiah, he could call himself a servant, a child of God. And maybe you say inside, "Oh, I wish I had that faith. I wish I could address God and say, I am thy servant, just like David did, and just like Nehemiah did." And now when I'm speaking about having no portion, and no right, and no memorial in Jerusalem, you apply that to yourself. You say, "That's my condition." But wasn't there a time when you did have a hope, when you did have some faith to believe that God had a favor towards you, that he looked upon you in mercy? Wasn't there a time that you would have given everything you had if you could say, "The Lord is my portion"? Wasn't there a time that God opened up the fullness of his covenant to your view, which is in Christ Jesus, and you saw everything that you needed there? Oh, you longed and desired for this. You only had a sight of it. But the sight was so sweet. It set your soul going out in desires and longings to possess it. Oh, if you ever have had this, then you are an Israelite. Then you have a portion in Jerusalem. This God has favored you above so many other creatures here below. And now we find this Sanballat and Tobiah, they strove immensely to stop the work of the building of the walls in the city of Jerusalem. In the next chapter we find so many of the Israelites contributing their services to the building of this city. So many families, they went out and began to build. And the walls, they started to go up. And when these enemies saw the walls going up, they tried in every way to stop the work so that there would be a standstill. They spake to the people and laughed at them and made fun of them. And they mocked them, they ridiculed them, they despised them. Anybody ever do that to you in your life? Anybody make fun of you? Anybody ever despise you? Anybody ever laugh at you? Are you a child of God? Do you come out for his honor? Do you strive against sin? Do you protest against sin? They'll mock you. They'll speak against you. They'll laugh at you. They'll try to make fun of you. And my hearers, in a natural sense, when this takes place in our natural life, it's against our pride. If we have friends and they despise us, they ridicule us for certain things, and then we get that home to us. And to remain friends, then we do as they do, or we do worse than they do. We sin then against God. You know, the bottom of hell is covered with mockers, with despisers, with those that laugh and scorn at God, at his word, at his people. Oh, when young people are still not married and their parents warn them, admonish them, speak to them in love, many young people, sad to say, they laugh, they mock, they ridicule their parents who are seeking the good and the welfare of their children. Have I any such amongst me? Or may God protect you from making a mockery of what your parents are striving to do for you and for your welfare. And now, my hearers, these men, this Sanballat, Tobiah, and an Arabian, they tried to get this man Nehemiah out of the way. And they knew that he was the man that had come there, and they thought if we get rid of him, then the work will stop immediately. And where they couldn't stop him by despising them and laughing at him, they sent letters to him. And they wanted him to come outside of the city of Jerusalem and talk with them. Four times they sent word to him by messengers to come out, but he was wise to them. He refused to go. And then they sent a letter to him and said to him in this letter that all around